Good morning and welcome everyone to our meeting. It is now 9:00 on March 7th, 2023, and time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Rebecca Wolf, President of the Commission. To my right is Commissioner Sid Logan, Vice President. To my left is Commissioner Tony Olson, Secretary. Scott Jones at the main table here is our Chief Financial Officer. Colin Willenbrock is our General Counsel, newcomer to our staff, and we're welcoming him too today. Melissa Collins, Commission and Executive Services Director, is just on the right of Scott Jones. Alyssa Morrison, Clerk of the Board, here to my left. Jenny Rich is at the computers in front of us. She's Deputy Clerk of the Board. And Morgan Stolzner is Deputy Clerk of the Board at the sign-in table. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices. This session is for the Board and CEO General Manager or his substitute to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with PUD staff. President Rebecca will now announce Chief Financial Officer Scott Jones to facilitate the discussion. Welcome, Scott, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Commissioner Wolf. Let me start by adding our welcome to Colin. This is his first meeting today, so sitting in the General Counsel chair, so welcome. He's got big shoes to fill with Ann Spangler's retirement, but we're excited for Colin to be here, and I'm sure John would have preferred to be here on Colin's first day, but he's traveling. So anyway, on behalf of the leadership team, we appreciate you being here, and best of luck to you. I will give you the floor at the...
Yeah, thank you for that. Really excited to be here, and appreciate the warm welcome. I think I'm on day four now, officially, or four or five. So a lot to learn, a lot of exciting things going on at Snohomish PUD, and really appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks, Colin. We're going to switch the agenda around just a little bit. Kim Griggs.
Yes.
Hey, Kim.
Hi.
Kim is going to start us off today, and you have the floor for a couple of agenda items.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, the teacher in me doesn't want to have them to the back, but I will go this direction if this feels right. And let's see. Okay. Hi, my name is Kim Griggs. I am the Associate Director of Worksite Tours for an organization called Washington Alliance for Better Schools, also known as WABS. And WABS is an organization that brings industry and education together. So we build experiences through worksite tours, job shadows, apprenticeships, because we have learned that schools don't really have time to do all the planning around that and work with organizations such as the Snohomish PUD. This might be a little out of order, but if you look at this picture, this is actually Everett and Edmund's students out at the training yard in Arlington on December 13th. And they're set up this huge experience where students are engaging in different types of careers for the Snohomish PUD.
We are recording, so be really close to your speaker. Thank you so much.
Okay. So like I said, we are collaborative. Basically, our board is made up of the superintendents for 13 school districts, and we're a leader in STEM education. We also, most of what we do is look at students that are furthest from opportunity and try to lift them up and give them these experiences. And basically, we leverage our resources, talent, and intellectual capital. We also do a lot of grant funding to be able to support these experiences for students. So a little bit about the worksite tours, and that's what students experience at Snohomish PUD on December 13th, is when they go on tour, they get to hear from employees. The whole purpose is to get them face-to-face with near peer. And we want them to learn about how did that person get there? What recommendations do they have? What did they actually be doing at the job site? So the Snohomish PUD, I'm here to say thank you. It was one of the most incredible experiences. Students actually got to touch and feel and do everything and spend most of the day with rotating through different sectors, I guess, within the Snohomish PD and learn all about it. If you haven't heard of WOBS also, we have teacher experiences as well. We have something called Access STEM. And Access STEM is coming back, and it's where teachers get to come into organizations like Snohomish PUD and learn about these different jobs and careers. Because what we've learned is we can take all these students out and they can learn about careers, but we really need the teachers to come out of the classroom because they can go home and sell their careers to students. And sometimes teachers forget about the careers. They get so embedded in the curriculum that we also need to help them learn how to apply that. So yeah, and when they come out, we want them to participate in work-based problems and activities, and we want them to interact with employees the whole way. Right now we're working with King, Pierce, and Snohomish counties, but we're also expanding. Here are some partners that I've been working with down south, and this keeps growing. As you know, with COVID, worksite tours definitely took a pause, but this right now I have a huge menu of organizations for school districts to choose from and go on these worksite tours. I just pushed out 1,000 students from Renton, pretty much their whole sophomore class, to 14 different industries, and they spent the day learning all about careers.
This is impressive.
Thank you.
Really good.
It's my favorite thing. As a teacher, I was always like, I don't know, I'm going to teach this curriculum, but really what we're going to do is go somewhere every Friday. So this job is working for me. And I can tell you, 10 years ago, I reached out to Jenny LaMarca and Danny Miles, if anybody remembers him back in the day. And Danny spent every Friday in my class, either just calling in through FaceTime or spending time teaching students about engineering. And Jenny LaMarca has been amazing, if you know her. Actually, for my next project, I'll talk about Jenny. But so I have two things here. So as you can see, a lot of these are south end, but I'm just able to right now build up this north region, or they call it the north region. I call it Snohomish County. So I'm adding on companies, and I cannot thank Snohomish PUD for, I made one call to Aaron Janesco, if you know who that is, and he was like, I got you. Listen, how many kids can you send? Can you send hundreds? And I was like, okay. Yes, I can. Most companies tell me 20, but okay, let's do this. And he and his team, who I'll talk about in a minute, set up the most amazing experience. Partner roles. So what WOBS does is we bring together the companies. I've added in post-secondary institutions because I think it's one thing to go out and visit, but then what I try to do is ship them off quickly to WSU Everett or Amtech, if you know what that is, or Water Center or somewhere. I want students to walk out of their senior year with, they know I'm going to get a certification, go right to work. I'm going to go to my 2-year, go right to work, or I'm going to go to the 4-year. And like, I want them to see every single path. So senior year, as a 12-year engineering manufacturing teacher, my goal was always, I don't want that student to leave my class and go, now I don't know what. And so I don't want them to end up in their parents' basement confused on where to go. So what we do also is schools and teachers, it's complicated to go on field trips. When you think about all the emails that I've had between the CIO's team and Aaron and everything, they need to focus on teaching. So what we do is swoop in and go, okay, we're gonna pay for your buses, subs, lunch. We want to make sure the kids have a really nice lunch. And then we design the experience and they just get to kind of sit back and also be learners.
Yeah, I hear you say you coordinate the buses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, which is not my favorite part of this job.
I know. But the one here at school, that's very helpful too.
It is very helpful.
Schools aren't always that open to
right, we pay for buses, we pay for because especially if you're paying attention to the news right now, there's some budget cuts, so we're trying to step in and help. But we do that through grant funding. So one of the things that we're expanding, and here's my sales pitch, thank you. Worksite tours is in place, but now we're adding interactive job shadows. So what this is a continuum. We want sophomores and juniors to go on worksite tours, and then we want the seniors, junior seniors, to have interactive job shadows. So this is what I'm looking for next, is the student in the fall goes on a worksite tour or two. Then in the spring, they go, okay, what I really liked was IT. And it's not just the PUD, it's any organization. I like the marketing. I want to be an electrician. And then I send them on a one day, like, it's not just one student to a person, but it's three students, one professional, They're all in one space. It's still one field trip, but they get to dive a little bit deeper. There's curriculum behind it, but then they can really make decisions their senior year about what to enroll in. And then there's internships, which a lot of organizations do internships, but we're hoping to help them make better decisions before they get there. Okay, now the fun stuff. So on December 13th, most amazing experience ever. I don't know if you can see on the right side of that picture. That is a student from Everett Public Schools. I actually called Aaron. I was like, are you sure you want this picture? It's a student in the machine. I don't know the rules. I really hope Ellen is not here, but
he looks happy.
He's so happy.
Like, he's so happy.
I should have made this picture bigger because it's the biggest smile in the world. And then on the left hand side is a bunch of students, and if you could see their faces, they are full smiles. This was, I had from this experience, I had teachers and students tell me this was the best day of their teaching career, and it was the students' best day they've had. So thank you. And here's who I want to say thank you to: John Harlow, Guy Payne, Aaron. Aaron was my main point of contact. I called him. I really didn't even have to tell him much. He was like, yes. Paul Kiss, I forgot to add a picture of this, but he was there with me all day, and so I know he is a big part of this. Jeff Roberts and Slade Willis. There was a team of about 25 people. I was able to bring a whole bunch of students from two different districts. They rotated through. Nobody was bored, which is a big deal for juniors to not look bored. So it was an amazing experience. I have to say there's already another one set up on April 25th, where I'm bringing North Shore students and Mukilteo students. So we have more planning, and then I'm going to be coming to you about job shadows. And when I say you, job shadows are bigger, so it's really all of you. So that is actually all I have until I switch gears to my coaching position. Any questions about worksite tours?
So I have a question.
Oh, yep.
Who are your grantors? You get grants.
There's, okay.
Is it state, federal?
Yes, so OSPI is some of them. There's an organization called College Success Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
They were the main grantor for this. And then because I'm new to this role, I've only been in it 6 months, I don't know all the grantors'
okay, that's
names.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to know that most of your funding comes from grants.
It does. So districts pay a very small fee. I'm very small, each one, and I don't even want to ask. Like say what it is, but it's tiny compared
sure.
to what we end up or that we use funds for. And then actually it's grant season right now, which is not fun season, and we are just I shouldn't be here right now. We should be
is that on your screen writing the grant?
Luckily I'm more of an editor at this point.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. This is I think a high priority for us here to help. I see the head of our human resources department back there nodding ahead. Mr. Payne, Guy Payne is here. And of all the list of the people you were recognizing and thanking, is Aaron here? But anyway, it's great to have all of you here. And thank you for what you do. I am a retired teacher, and I always like to stress jobs in whatever I'm teaching.
Yes.
Or environment or whatever is important, you know.
Right. Teachers get a lot of pressure to do curriculum, but then
right.
it's
if
nice
clever,
to
though, you can find a way.
You can find a way. Walt just tries to help find a way.
Right.
So, no, I want to thank Snohomish PD. I can't, every single person I've talked to about anything has said, sure, we're going to make it work. So it's obvious that it's built into the system here that, you know, helping community is part of it and partnering with school districts.
Thank you for all your hard work.
Thank you.
I would be interested if you could introduce us to the students that are with us this morning.
Yeah, so I'm going to shift gears really quick.
I
have a totally, it's weird that I was here, so I asked if I could thank them for the worksite tours, but the real reason we're here is because of the students. So they're going to take over because they're presentation pros.
So before you did that, I got an observation.
Yeah.
So what an amazing enrichment program for these students. And the other thing is I want to say is it's students are interested in the clean energy future.
Yeah.
The place to be is utilities.
Yes.
That's where it's going to happen. Yeah. Utility like Snohomish, we're large enough. If you're interested in government, we have people that work for government. We have people that build things. We have the gamut of kinds of jobs and stuff. And just make a plug.
Yes, no, that's perfect, because that's what we need. Okay, so I'm switching gears. I wish I had my Camino Island Smarties hat, but I'm just going to introduce them really quick. So now we're moving on. I am a robotics coach in a league called First Lego League. And First Lego League is basically like a sports team for students. It goes all the way through high school, but the league that we're in is called First Lego League. And students are asked to, around the world actually, this is the Lego robot that everybody uses. And everybody in the world, when you register for the league, you get a field. And these students, the Camino Island Seaside Smarties, had to then pre-program this robot and then go to tournaments where their robot competes. I'm sure some people have seen this on TV. In addition to just pre-programming a robot, students are also asked to do a research project. And this year's theme was energy. So I, of course, called up Jenny LaMarca, because she always saves the day for me. And I said, Jenny, you know anybody who could help us with an energy app? Because my team, second year team, is interested in creating an energy saving app. And Jenny quickly put me connected in with Melody Moore, Mark Rosen, and Jeff Feinberg. And those three people zoomed in with us in their evenings, and they helped these students actually learn how to build an app. And they helped them think through what the app could look like. And so this year, the students actually advanced to the second level. We haven't made it to state yet because we're still wrestling with this robot and we needed to behave a little bit bigger or better. But we have three more years to figure that piece out. So their energy presentation is amazing. They advanced. I want to thank those people again for Zoom taking their evening with us. If you don't have any questions about the league, though, I am going to turn it over to the cutest team that you've ever seen. You guys ready?
Ready?
Yep.
Where would you like me to stick them? What if we come right here?
Let's put it in the center. One of these over here for you guys. We're not actually speaking.
Just talk loud enough.
A little bit.
You know how to speak loud the whole year, so you can yell at them and say, "We can't hear." So
actually, we have that problem too.
Oh, you do.
So how are we doing? Okay, can you go a little bit that way? Okay. I'm lopsided.
Guys, ready?
Yeah. Okay, but this is, everyone can hear you, but that's who we're talking to. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And talk loud.
Hi, I'm Cora.
Hi, I'm Allison.
Hi, I'm Riley.
Hi, I'm Harlow.
Hi, I'm Ivy.
Hi, I'm Reese.
Hi, I'm Cammie.
Hi, I'm Olivia.
Hi, I'm Kaya.
Hi, I'm Malia.
And we are the Camino Island Seaside Smarties.
Yeah.
Hi, we are the Camino Island Seaside Smarties, or Smarties for short. Here are the highlights of our research project, the C app.
S is for smart.
M is for motivate.
A is for adapt.
R is for reward.
T is for time.
I is for innovative.
C is for energy.
S is for savings.
These are the cornerstones of our Smarties Energy app. And now Cora is going to talk to you about the problems we are trying to solve.
We would like to introduce you to our innovation research project, the Smarties Energy app, or C app for short. People are using too much energy running their businesses and taking care of their homes, leading to global warming, extreme weather, deforestation, and sea level rise. The problem we are trying to solve with our innovation project has to do with helping people use less energy. Now, Allison with our research question.
We have two research questions. Number one, how can we save or use less energy? Number two, how can we motivate people to save energy? I will now talk about some of our ideas we explored before creating the C app. Here are some ideas our team came up with. First, some of our grandparents have weather stations in their homes. Those weather stations could also display energy usage. Second, if we turn off the light, our parents won't be mad. Third, organize a workathon to raise energy awareness. Fourth, create an energy-saving app. Organize an energy festival. We decided the app would be the best option to reach the most people. Harlow will now tell you about a survey we conducted.
Each of us polled 10 people to find out if our friends and neighbors would use our energy-saving app. We asked two questions. If we created an energy-saving app for your home, will you use it? Do you currently use an energy-saving app? As you can see from the graph, the 98 people we polled have said that they would use an energy-saving app and that they currently do not use one. People said they would use it if it connected easily, is free, simple to use, and saved them money. Now Ivy will tell you about some of our research.
In addition to the research survey, we spoke with experts, researched existing apps, and something new to us called gamification. Here's what we found. Our experts included Jeff, a senior manager, and Adam, who is an app architect from the local public utility. They loved this idea and said we were ahead of them as they have plans to do something like this in a few years. They have their own energy app, and there are other apps such as Honeywell and Nest apps, but they said their customers don't really use their app except to pay the bill. Since our last competition, Jeff then put us in touch with Melody, who is their PUD app developer. Melody taught us about wireframes, which allowed us to bring our app to life by moving it from paper to digital. We will talk more about this soon. Our C app would only require that you are hooked up to public utilities, and it is free. It's simple. Now here's Riley to tell you about wireframes using Mach Plus.
Melody looked at our app, at our paper prototype, and suggested that we use a website called Mach Plus to bring our app to life. Melody gave us a short training presentation on Mach Plus. For the last few weeks, we've been developing our app in Mach Plus. Mach Plus is a free website, but we were limited to 10 layers and not able to create the final product. So we plan to raise money for the pro version so we can continue to finish the prototype. Reese will now tell you about the importance of gamification built into our app.
I'm going to talk about the gamification and notification research because making the app fun and motivating is one of our main goals. Gamification, in short, is to encourage engagement and to motivate. This means that people using our app will have fun. We looked up several endangered animals that are most affected by climate change, like the panda, snow leopard, tiger, polar bear, green sea turtle, and monarch butterfly. We would use these images as part text notifications with text. I would say, great job, thanks for helping save me. Did you turn your lights off? Now here's Cammie and Olivia to show you the C app prototype.
I'm going to tell you about our Smarties app prototype. This poster represents the advertisement for our Smarties energy app, like you would see in the app store. This shows you the app home screen. Notice that it has four main selections, which I will talk to you about now. First, the live meter button. The live meter button will show you a live energy report that is updated every 15 minutes. The home will change colors based on how much energy you use that day. Green is good, red is bad, and so on. Sometimes a pop-up window will come up with a special message from one of our endangered animals. These notifications are based on the color of your house. As an example, if your house is red, a red polar bear might pop up saying, keep trying, or you can do better. If your house is green, a green sea turtle might pop up saying, excellent work, or keep it up. Now Olivia is going to walk you through the next portion of our app.
When we push the energy use button, we see graphs of our energy consumption compared to similar time last year on the day, week, or month. Or you can go to the energy goal screen. Here, you can push the personal goals button and set your own personal kilowatt goals by the day, week, month, or year. Or you can touch the My Bonus Goals and see how you can earn extra joules. On the reward screen, you see how many joules you've earned. The more you save, the more you earn. Joules can be used to purchase rebates, energy-efficient items for your home, or even things such as coffee or food.
The Free Sea app rewards you and rewards the planet by making us all more aware of our energy consumption. And now Kaya is going to tell you about some challenges we faced.
In every good research project, there are a few challenges. I'm here to share with you some of ours. First, finding time to meet with weather, power outages, sports, and constant illnesses. Also, trying to simplify the app so it's easier for the end user. Last but not least, finding an app developer to help us go live. Next is Aaliyah with our conclusion.
In conclusion, we feel that the Smarties Energy app will help people manage their energy use and consumption, which will help save the planet. And now Riley for future research.
We are looking forward to diving deeper into making our app a reality. Future areas of study are app designer, continuing to work on our app in Mach Plus, continuing to work with the Snohomish PUD, and hopefully they will use our app. Thank you. Any questions?
Sure. Wow. That is phenomenal program, really is. I have for a long time felt that we cannot get down if we have young people who are moving forward, who are going to help save this world. It's all about you and your generation and the generations ahead. So I really believe in you, and I'm so proud of you for what you're doing. And keep the word, you know, tell all your friends and neighbors, that all the young people that you can, that they need to pay attention to what you're talking about today. Those are really important ideas, and thank you so much. It's not just ideas, we've got to make it happen, right? Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for getting up early and coming to see us today. Your app is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
So when it gets done, will you guys share it with us so we can
absolutely
see it? How much money, I'm just curious, how much money do you guys need to
get
the deluxe version?
All the money. So apps, sorry.
All the money.
Yeah, all the money. We would like all the money. How much are you offering? They're also willing to sell it after they create it. But apps are somewhere between 20,000 to 30,000,
okay,
to bring to life. So
are apps copyrighted? Is there a copyright on an app?
They can be.
Yeah. I mean, so their whole thing is about motivating an existing app that you already have and are in the process of building, but then add, you know, sort of like a weight loss app motivates you. Turn off your lights. So
good job, ladies.
They would really like to continue to work on it. But
where are all the guys? Where are the boys?
No.
Nope.
No boys.
Nope.
No boys.
Girls. So women and girls are going to save the world, right?
Yeah.
and just one parting shot. Do you realize your project parallels what many utilities are doing throughout the country? Those kinds of tools that Snohomish PUD has launched or is on the design shelf, and you are spot on with the future. You really are.
There's one app that a friend of mine has developed that tells people who own electric cars, how their energy is being used or lost in the driving of the car. So apps are absolutely important.
Well, I'm very impressed. What school are you all from?
Okay,
great. Wow, it's so impressive. You guys are just spot on with the kind of information people need to use energy more wisely help them establish what they do and the effect of it. So wonderful.
And I also want to commend you. I know that the work that's involved in these enhancement programs, you got to do everything, and you got to do everything yesterday. And I commend you for it, and keep up the good work.
You can come back anytime.
You can work for us when we graduate from high school.
Yes.
Help us get better.
One of you wants to be the CFO now.
I definitely think you should get a job channel for Dawn.
Well,
one that can, you know, with a clock watch.
Yep. Yep. Are you all able to set time?
Yes.
Well, then you could probably help our CEO. Struggles a little bit of time.
And maybe one of you will become a lawyer like our lawyer here. This is Madeline. He keeps everything, makes sure we're legal in every way all the time.
Yeah, I just listened to the polar bear. You have to listen to the polar bear. That's right. Keeping
you better.
Thank you, ladies. We will start job shadowing right now. Does anyone? I will take a volunteer to come over here and introduce the next person who wants to do it.
We have a script.
We'll start the job shadowing now. Who wants to come over?
We want
to. Come on, come on.
Can we do two?
All right, let's go.
Again.
You can do two.
Hey, Carol.
You guys, well, actually, if you're sticking around, one of you can do the next introduction, and then I'll let you do the next one after that. So just read this right here, if you can read it nice and clearly into the mic.
Next up, Julie, to talk about media.
That's it. Julie's right there. She's going to talk about media. And that's all it is. And then if you stick around, you can come up and do the next one. I'm into job shadowing right now.
Hi, we
have like this app.
Cammy, wait. They want a picture. If we get a photo over there,
yeah. They want to get a photo.
Do I just have them come up? You can go first. I'll just take a picture.
Cam, you're
going to take a photo. I'm taking a photo right here.
You all could be getting. How about that?
Well, how do you? You can take
it. Oh, sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't need to be there.
Picture.
No, I'm good. Oh, get in here. Get in the picture. In the picture.
So cute. Shh.
Far enough.
Everything looks good. Okay, ready?
One, two,
three. Thank you.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you guys so much.
The chance they don't want to stick around, Scott. So,
hey, grab your stuff.
Julie, you're normally the one that gets us going in the morning.
You're
gonna have a hard act to follow.
Yeah, a couple observations about that. One, most of you have heard, I was younger than they were when I came to the district for an event, and I couldn't believe later when I got hired at the district because it was so impactful coming and being part of something. And I do think it makes a big difference, and I kind of lived that experience here. And the other thing I thought was wonderful is Jenny LaMarca and the work she does. She still is working remotely as she battles through her health issues. So I love that she got a call out on all the things she does, despite some of the things she's doing in her personal life. So
great. That was really inspiring, as you are.
Thank you. So we've been busy again, as usual. Erin led it off with having we don't very often get to do radio. And so Erin had a sit-down interview with Bill Swartz with Como Radio, talk about our IRP, hydropower, EVs, all of what things are going on at the district. So Bill Swartz has a Sunday morning show. I hadn't personally heard it, but he reached out and that was cool. Erin did a great job. So then we had a lot of things about the IRP this month. The open house was such a success, and the Everett Herald talked about it in two different stories, as I think you probably saw. Media coverage on our brief windstorm in late February. Como covered that. Out Lake Terrace News covered that. Two stories on our SEPA award, Smart Energy Power Alliance, clearing up in NWPPA. Scott Gibson and Erin worked with Apache Energy on a story for their website. And the Herald column comes out this week, and it's a fun one. It's Home of the Future, so don't miss that. It's talking about all those things coming. And our power talk is Thursday at noon, and that is on the IRP. And I think Garrison is getting featured, and we have employees talking with our different with our people that tune in. I brought a lot of show and tell today. Here is the Developing Energy is our cover for the annual report. Everybody. And then we have our new buses are out, powered by clean energy. Our big buses that are really cool new the wraps along with our conservation ads are on the buses as well. So they're getting changed out, so watch for that. We've made some changes to our wire, and I wanted to point that out. You'll be seeing more on having infographics on the front, trying to get our information across quickly. And then I like this. On the second page, we're working to feature our employees more. So there'll be a piece about, this one is on Curtis, who is our Employee of the Month. Most often they'll be on Employee of the Month.
I have a smiling face placard in my office, and that just keeps me happy all the time.
Like it.
What is that up here?
This is the wire. It's the newsletter in the bill stuffer. So just updating that. So
yeah, I noticed when we have employee things on social media, we get more engagement, it seems like. Not that they beat outages.
And we're trying to do more of that. We try to be careful because you're vulnerable on social media. So we just always want to watch comments and things. For the most part, we try to do a nice little clip and then direct anybody who wants to our website so they can, because we have great profiles on our different, many, many employees on our website. So most often we do that. But usually we get just raves about and then we have, I'm really excited about this, it's coming out so fun. This is our art that's getting developed for Zip and Zap. It's coming along. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And Zip is our female squirrel, and Zap is our male. And look how great it looks with our logo. That just screams t-shirts, everybody. That's just gonna be so great.
Our new logo, is it?
No, it's just, and it looks better on screen, but I asked Wendy to print one out because I just think it's coming together really fun. And I think it'll be a great connection for another way. Mascots feel light, but they really are a wonderful way to connect your public to you. It's just another good community engagement. So that was fun. And then I just think these are coming out sensational. So for our energy block party, the ads that will be running for Earth Day. I hope everybody's planning to attend. This is David Kruger's son, who David presented to you last week. I thought it was really cute. So we have the hottest two food trucks hottest two food trucks in Snohomish County coming to the event. Dick's Burgers, what's the other one called? Ryan's Rezzies. So it's off to Layla and it's tacos.
Okay.
I think it's hot. It's really hot.
Spicy hot?
Yeah.
No. Just really hot. All right. My last thing is today I'm just going to read to you. This will be my last meeting in front of you. I've been part of these meetings since the early 2000s, part of the ELT since 97, and a member of Team PUD for 35 years. Long time. It's been wonderful, but next month you'll get to have Aaron Swaney in front of you doing this report. I want to say thank you to you all. I want to say it's Colin's first meeting, but it's my last meeting. That seems like a really strange thing. I especially want to thank Commissioner Olson. She was on my hiring team many, many years ago. That was a really great day for me when I got hired here. I also want to thank the ELT and all the team members of this great organization. I love it. Give me a second. My friends and family, because they hear about this place way too much. They are always hearing about it from me. I especially want to thank my super cool CorpCom team, who are the best on the planet to work with, truly. I feel a lot like James Corden when he announced he was leaving the late night show. He said, "What kind of crazy person leaves a great job like this?" That's kind of what I've been struggling with. But like he said, it's time to get out there and see what new adventures are there. 35 years here. I don't even know who I am if I'm not a PUD team member. So it's like, okay, I better go figure it out.
Always, always a PUD.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I know this is probably a surprise. I hate goodbyes. I really hate long goodbyes, so next Friday is my last day. I love that it's St. Patrick's Day because it's all about luck and fun, and those are two of my favorite things. So it's really been my privilege to serve here. Thank you.
Commissioner Olson has requested that we take a 5-minute break, so maybe we can mingle a little bit.
No breaks, no breaks.
John, if you need to. Okay, thank you. We'll be back at 10:45.
9:45.
At 9:46. And I'll go back to you, Scott, to take us to the next part about the Salton River.
Yeah, we've got a couple before that, Commissioner Wolf, but I get the mic today, so I get the personal privilege of making a comment since Julie decided she wanted to announce today. So I asked her if she was going to stay in for the rest of the session, and she said yes, so she gets to sit and listen to this. Julie was, Colin and I were just talking about this, Julie was the first person that connected with me when I got here. Her, you know, we can, like, if I leave tomorrow, this place will be just fine. And somebody will find, you know, people to do the stuff I do. We may find people that do the stuff that Julie does, but we won't find anybody that's as passionate and energetic about the PUD.
For sure.
I have never worked with anyone in my career, 27 years, I have never worked with anyone up or down anywhere in the organization that brings the level of energy that Julie brings to this place. And she has been here for decades, but you can work a job for decades and still not necessarily care about the company. Julie cares about this place more than anybody that we have here. And she brings this perspective every time the leadership team meets. She consistently brings a perspective about employees, about the community, about the people that she deals with outside this building that is just remarkable. And so we will figure out a way to move forward, of course, but on behalf of John and the executive team and everybody else here, we have to say out loud that we can't replace all the other stuff. Julie's energy and passionate dedication for this place is unbelievable. So it's not replaceable. With that,
now she's really balling.
Keep it together.
That was good.
Together.
With that, we'll move to the next agenda item. Kim, I think you guys are just available for questions today. No presentation. Any questions, comments on governmental affairs topics?
Just a minute. It's like.
We bounced the agenda around a little bit.
Yeah, hold on.
We're on.
I've got
1A2.
A quick question on the State House Bill 1216, the concerning clean energy siting. So, is that a change in the pump storage siting? Is that the same words we had last time, or
She's able to unmute. She's on there as well. Does that mean it is well?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, yes.
So the on the report, yes, those are new words. They refined it slightly in an amendment, but it, by and large, substantively wise, is the same.
Great, thank you. And then on 1329, I see that we're in a position to support it. Are the other publics in the state supporting it, or where are they?
Yes, so this is Ryan Collins, Senior Government Relations Program Manager, for the record. We, Snohomish, are supportive. Seattle City Lights is supportive, as well as Tacoma. The other publics, Waputa and others, again, I don't want to speak for them, are still reviewing the bill, but are relatively neutral at this point.
Thank you.
So of all of the bills, which ones have been passed? Can you just give us the numbers? I have a list of them, all the ones that you've reported on here. So some of them have been passed.
Yes, and so actually over the weekend, several of the mm-hmm. bills that we've highlighted have also passed. So all but two of our key legislation are already through their respective chambers. The only two that have not are the PSE bill, as well as the solar net metering bill.
Okay, great.
So what is that, six of eight?
Great work, thank you. Oh, I wanna say, I really, really enjoyed some of the references. I watched a video about Lisa Brown's leaving the Department of Commerce. I have a special connection to her from Spokane. And I'm trying to find, anyway, under interesting reads and some of the hearings, those were very high interest for me. So thank you always for those.
Thank you, commissioners. Any other comments, questions on that one?
I have no questions.
We'll move to 1D. This is the Salton River floodplain presentation. Don Pressler.
I was going to say my heart is singing hearing about robotics and FLL and rural power this morning until we heard about Julie's last day, but I wish her the best, and I think there's great things in store for her moving on. She's been such a consummate cheerleader, as everybody has said, so my heart still sings for you, so good luck and best wishes. Don Pressler, Natural Resources Department, and I have the pleasure of talking about the Salton River Floodplain Activation Project, and hopefully this presentation will look familiar to you. I have presented on it several times in the past at the various stages in this project, and so today I am here.
Is it turned on still? It is on, I checked.
We are to give an update on where we are. So today's presentation is information only. I'm going to give a recap on where we've been with the project, our update on the grant applications that we submitted, and then give you a heads up that we'll be back at next commission meeting for a request for approval of a resolution. The PUD has a long-standing history of environmental stewardship in the Salton Basin, and specifically the Salton River, stemming back to when we first constructed the Jackson Project. And moving into our relicensing efforts and settlement agreement processes, we came to develop a plan to really enhance the habitat availability and diversity of the Lower Salton River. And that was articulated in the license obligation when we issued our license in 2011. However, we knew that this was a really important aspect to the habitat and mitigation and stakeholder interests. So as we were waiting for our license to be issued, we actually went ahead and started developing the plans, getting the permits, and being set ready to go. So when the license was issued in 2011, we could jumpstart in constructing this project. So in 2012, we were issued our license in September 2011. In 2012, we jumped on it and started constructing the side channel enhancement project. We were required to enhance or construct over 10,000 lineal feet of habitat, and we had 2 years to do that. We actually built 11,700 plus feet, lineal feet, and got it done in 1 year. We wanted to make sure that the resource benefited the most, and they do that by having it available as soon as possible. So with that side channel enhancement project in 2012, we developed, like I said, an enhanced side channel itself, and then we also placed large woody debris and boulders, engineered log jams in there. We did riparian management for invasive species and replanting, so really enhancing that side channel habitat to benefit rearing salmonids. That's one of the limiting factors of salmon recovery in Snohomish Basin, and so by providing prime habitat close to spawning grounds is really important. And that's why side channels in the lower river is so important to us. Over the years after 2012, we've monitored the site, and we went back for continuous invasive weed control and checking on the plantings that we did. We also did snorkel surveys and minnow traps and pedestrian surveys to monitor the usage by the fish to see what was there, when they were there, and what locations they were using the side channels. And so fast forward to 2019, our Jackson Project Resource, Aquatic Resource Committee, we call it the ARC, they identified additional desire to increase diversity in that lower river. And based on our experience building those original side channels and our data collection and how those channels were being used, they identified, hey, this is a great opportunity. Are there more opportunities that we can do nearby? Can we expand this side channel network to increase that habitat availability? So we did an investigation. We identified a suite of projects that could look at habitat diversity in that lower river, including an additional side channel project off the existing network. And in 2020, we received a grant from the Recreation Conservation Office for $200,000 to do a preliminary investigation. And that includes some hydraulic modeling, studies for wetlands and cultural resources, and using that information, we did preliminary design work for a side channel. That grant itself was $200,000, no match, so there's no money expended by the KUD for that. It all came from the Recreation Conservation Office. And we finished that work just this past year, and so we rolled that into a new grant application. And so I gave you a verbal overview of the project, and I'll go through some pictures so you can see it specifically what I'm talking about here. So on the picture on the left, you can see the Solon River.
Just advance the slides.
Okay. On the left picture, upper right corner is Beta Lake and Comback Dam. And 16 miles down to the confluence with the Skykomish is the Sultan River. Excuse me. And we're focused on that lower river part. The upper part of the river is very canyony, as you can tell from the mountain topography there. And so we're really focused on that lower river where there is that floodplain and remnant floodplain.
This is a beautiful project. And
okay.
If there's anybody who hasn't done it, I recommend that they go to Sultan, walk up that trail, and see what a beautiful job you've done of restoring the trail and opening up all those side channels for the fish. I just love this project.
Thank you. We do too, and that's, you know, another reason why my heart's singing today. I get to talk about the Jackson Project and the and the good things that we're doing with it. Here is a drawing of the side channel work that we did in 2012, and the red sock is the new side channel that we want to create. So on this drawing, the upper side channel three, we had originally did some wood placement and boulder placement to create some more diversity. There's another side channel two on the left mid river there. We graded and did some light excavation at the inlet to make sure that water continuously flowed, along with some wood placement. And side channel four is down in Reese Park. That was a remnant channel, completely grown in by blackberry. So we went and cleared out all that blackberry and opened that up so water could flow again. And then the main bulk of where we did our work was in side channel one, with excavation, large woody placements, boulders, again, to create diversity. We didn't want to create a bunch of slip and slides where, you know, water goes in and fish fly out the other side. We wanted to create some complexity and habitat, pools and ripples and other types of desirable conditions for them. So the red part is a remnant side channel. It does receive some water under high flow conditions, but it's very intermittent and it doesn't provide riparian habitat on a regular basis. So that's the focus of what we want to do with the new project moving forward. Here is that preliminary design that we did through the RCO grants, and this shows typical placement of woody debris. And you can also see some wetlands identified, which we're avoiding. There's a lot of complications when you want to try to impact a wetland, even for beneficial uses. It makes it very complex. Here are some baseline condition photos of that area. On the upper left is the side channel one, and it'll connect into the new side channel that we want to create. The upper right is the remnant channel. Like I said, it does receive some flow under high water conditions, but not on a regular basis. So you can see that it is kind of formed there. And then the bottom two pictures are in the existing pasture land. This is an area where it would need to be excavated, and we would manage for some noxious weeds. There's quite a bit of blackberry in the general area as well. And so we would also do some planting. So over time, there would be coverage of the creek to make sure it doesn't get too hot for the salmon. We want to keep that water temperature ideal for what the salmon are doing.
So this is kind of in the category of refugia, where the salmon take refuge because the main stem is too warm, or some of the big parts of the river are warm.
Yeah,
so they can go up into these cooler areas to survive.
Right. So the main objective of side channels for rearing habitat. But it does serve secondary purposes for taking refuge when flows are really high in the main Sultan and they need some lower flow, they can take refuge in the side channels. Here's an example. This is from our 2012 side channel project after a couple of years with the vegetation starting to grow back in. This is something we anticipate happening with the new side channel project, and over time, again, with the trees growing much taller, there'll be more coverage. So good news is we applied for two grants for the same project. One was with the Recreation Conservation Office again, and one was through the Department of Ecology. The RCO, which we came to you last spring for, we were required to get approval to submit the application. And then we also applied for Ecology, which has a no match requirement. And drum roll, We actually got the ecology grant, which requires us to have no match. So ecology will put the full $765,000 to conduct this project. And out of, I wrote down the numbers here. They have a, it's a $40 million grant fund, and they had 57 applicants apply, and we were one of 26 to receive a grant. So really great news. We had great support from our Aquatic Resource Committee. They submitted letters of support, and they obviously were supportive in the first place in wanting this project to go forward, but we actually had letters of support, which are really important, from the Tulalip tribes and other county government. And so the next step is coming back at next commission meeting with the resolution requesting approval for us to sign the agreement.
Do you know if this is part of the, excuse me, the floodplains by design program?
No, that's a separate program.
That's a separate program.
Yeah, there's about 10 different types of grants that are very similar in scope. They want to do restoration, they want to work floodplains, salmon focus, or water resources focus.
Yeah.
And so we kind of monitor all of those. Some are through the Recreation Conservation Office, some are through ecology, some are through county, some have federal funds attached to it, so that opens up a whole new set of requirements. And so we kind of monitor the availability of funds, who we anticipate applying for it. And the floodplains by design, that one is really geared towards large-scale projects that are multi-year, multi-stakeholder, mm-hmm. and not necessarily geared towards something like what we're proposing today. So we didn't apply through that, knowing that we had better chances elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And luckily we got the ecology grant.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I just have a couple questions. So who owns this, the land that we're doing this on?
There's multi-parties right now. One is PUD, one is the City of Sultan, one is Volunteers of America, and a private landowner. And we just secured an easement with a private landowner, and we have a site visit with Volunteers of America next week. And we've already been in discussions with the City of Sultan, and they're very supportive, obviously, with the proximity to their Osprey Park and our good partnership.
Great. And this is not part of our licensing department, right? We're going above and beyond.
Correct.
Great.
Right. We fulfilled our license obligation as far as the side channel enhancements.
So do the side channels disappear because of the Jackson Project or the combination of changing stream flows? Water uptake for the city government? Or?
Yeah, it's a combination of things. With the Jackson Project, we nipped off those high flow events, those spill events, or, you know, the flooding events. So that, you know, is beneficial to the City of Sultan. However, it does take a toll on the river system to some extent. And then also with the development that's going on, historic logging practices.
Sure.
I mean, there's a lot of things. City of Everett had its water supply system on the Sultan River since the early 1900s. And so there's a lot of things that play into it, but Jackson was one part of it.
It's all part of the such a great success story, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
I have no question. Thank you so much,
thank
Tom.
You.
It's excellent.
Thank you. Next up is the presentation on the South Everett Community Solar Project. This is Susie Overby and Kelsey Lewis.
Good morning, commissioners. Susie Overby, Senior Program Manager in Energy Services.
Kelsey Lewis, Program Manager in Energy Services.
And we are here to give just an update on where we're at with the South Everett Community Solar Project. Before I do that, I do want to acknowledge the other members of our team, which is Jason Cohn, he's here today, Adam Lewis, Jessica Sparler, all in generation, Jennifer Keene, who is also in energy services in here with us, and then Leslie Moss in accounting, keeping us straight with all of our grant requirements. So today, we're not requesting anything of you. This is an update in advance of us coming back, likely in April, with a request for approval of a construction contract. So we're getting close to getting ground broken and getting the project built. As far as our agenda, we'll give a brief overview of the project, an update of the activities, work activities we've been doing. Our last presentation was in October of 21, so there's been a lot going on. And that has included outreach activities that Kelsey will describe, and then we will end with next steps and questions. So this may look familiar, but it's been a while. Just to remind you, this project is made possible with an award from the Washington Department of Commerce, their Clean Energy Fund 3. We received about $860,000 for the project and have a $640,000 match obligation. The primary objectives are to use the project to reduce energy burden for income qualified customers, and this is across the service territory. Bringing solar to a multifamily neighborhood, so it'll be located in the Casino Road neighborhood in Everett, which is dense and urban. It has a lot of multifamily housing, very different from our Arlington Community Solar Project. And we also chose this location to locate the project for grid benefits. So this is an area where we have summer peaking circuits. We have a lot of load in the area, so it made sense to locate this project where a solar profile would be beneficial to the grid and the community. The outcomes are going to be a 375 kilowatt community solar array. We'll be directing all of the solar generation benefits to Project Pride. So in Arlington, we had a number of customers buy into that project, and they're receiving credits on their bills. And in this case, all of those credits will be directed to Project Pride. And we hope to utilize the array to reduce summer peak demand on our circuits in that area. And just a side note, we have a separate Clean Energy Fund grant through Department of Commerce to study the feasibility of adding battery energy storage to this as well. So that is just underway right now. So to date, we've done extensive community engagement and outreach, and Kelsey will describe that in a moment. The project is being built on City of Everett property, and so we had a negotiation period to secure a lease agreement for that, and we successfully did that. We've been conducting physical and cultural site surveys, and all that work is completed. We have completed permitting, federal and state permitting to date, so NEPA and SEPA, and the city is reviewing our public works permit application. And then lastly, we have completed our engineering design and have our site, our equipment and design specifications ready to go, and those are with contracts and purchasing right now. So I'm going to pass it over to Kelsey.
Thanks, Susie. So once we got the lease agreement finalized with Everett last year, Laura Zorick and I spent a lot of time meeting with various groups in the community, including Connect Casino Road, the South Everett Rotary, the Westmont Holly Neighborhood Association. And we attended several events like National Night Out to talk to the community about the project, and also to get name suggestions for the project. This was part of the grant requirement to co-create with the community. So in the upper right-hand corner, you can see a photo of some of the name suggestions we received at the Connect Casino Road Summer Carnival. And then in September, we hosted an open house event at the site. So in the bottom right, you can see Laura talking to some of our attendees that are also our project neighbors at the adjacent community garden. And at that event, we had attendees vote on the name suggestions, and ultimately they selected El Sol al Alcance de Tus Manos, which means the sun at your fingertips. And we're hoping to use that in future co-creation work to inspire some of that. So as we go into the next stage of this project, we had a meeting with the Neighborhood Association to try to get feedback on how they'd like to see us further engage. And they mentioned that they would really love to see student artwork integrated with the fence design. So we're currently brainstorming ways to work with local organizations and the school districts to engage those students. We've had talks with Mukilteo School District, Urban Artworks, the Shack Art Center, and our own education team. Jennifer will be taking on that work as we move into the next phase. What's nice is we have a little bit of time, so talking to the schools, we determined that next school year would be best, so we can start in the fall, and then as the project's installed, maybe we can bring students to see their artwork in the same school year. But we have been doing a little bit of brainstorming. So our first idea was to have something that aligned with the name. So we're thinking maybe suns and handprints to go with the sun at your fingertips. So we've been testing materials, maybe acrylic, maybe wood, and testing, you know, different paint options. But then we were thinking it would be great if we could use recycled materials so we can, you know, align with our theme of conservation. So Jennifer has recently been talking to our recycle team to see what products we can use. And then Urban Artworks has also said that they can help us maybe design something. So we're still in the brainstorming phase, but it's been a really energizing and inspirational part of that project.
Kelsey, when we do outreach, do we have the opportunity to talk about the siding and to help people understand our system? I mean, you know, we're siding it in part because this is where we have summer peaking.
Yeah, we've mentioned that. It's mainly talking to them also about like options to reduce their personal heating load in the summer, and because a lot of those multifamily housing units, they don't have AC. A lot of it's from like the local industrial area, so we're trying to pair that education with the outreach.
That's great. We don't do energy audits anymore, I discovered, because of COVID. Puget Sound Energy also does not do energy audits, and even if you did them, I'm not sure if the people there would be able to afford to do the upgrades or whatever. But one thing, if you're open to just brainstorming, there is a school in that neighborhood, and I was trying to think, was it Challenger, the name of the school, the elementary school?
There's Challenger, Explorer, and Horizon, all in that.
I can't remember which one, but up on Casino Road, there's one there. And I think it would be really cool to go in and do a presentation with some of the kids in their classrooms about this project, because especially along the Casino Road. I used to supervise teachers there. And it's a rough neighborhood, as you know. We need to inspire kids. And something like this might really help. So just
absolutely
throw it out there for you.
Yeah, we're still trying to figure out the best way to combine the education with the art, given some time constraints. But partnering with certain organizations and having Mukilteo School District on board should make that more feasible.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's great. And I'll pass it back over to Cece.
Great. Thank you, Kelsey. So our next steps with respect to construction, we're looking to publish a request for proposals in the coming weeks, very soon. And we'll be evaluating those bids, and we anticipate coming back here at the April 18th meeting with a construction contract for your review. And if you approve that, we would be issuing a notice to proceed in May, and so hitting that spring construction season with this project. That's what we have for today.
Thank you. Keep on going. That's great.
So great presentation, and I think Public Victor, wonderful name, so that's great.
I agree with you, John.
Yes.
Great work, Kelsey and Jennifer's part, and Laura as well, so thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner, you got a 5-minute break.
No. Okay, we will adjourn until 10:25.
Thank you.
It is now 10:25, and we are resuming our meeting. Next, Mr. Scott here. Take it away.
Next up is an update on the Snow Smart. Say it correctly.
We had the Smarties, and now we have Snow Smart.
John, are you leading us off?
Hello, Commission. I'm John Heeb, Principal Engineer in our System Planning and Protection Department. And if you're a fan of grant season or acronyms, this is the presentation for you. So Snow Smart is Snohomish PUD's secure, modern, automated, and reliable technology project. Mm-hmm. And really what we're trying to do is go get some federal funding that was part of the bipartisan infrastructure. So the purpose today, we're going to give you some information on what we're doing in this grant application process. We don't need any specific actions today, just looking for general approval. And then if we were to be successful in our application, we're looking for action at that point. So a little bit of background on the program itself, GRIP, or Grid Resilience and Innovation Partnerships, is a funding opportunity put on by the Department of Energy. And it's really part of that bipartisan infrastructure law that was passed in November 2021. And they're administering a $10.5 billion grid resilience program. The program came in three different parts, three funding mechanisms, or they called them themes. And what the PUD really determined is we fit best into theme two. And I'll talk a little bit about that. But the overall goals of the GRIP program are to transform resilience in consideration of future shifts in generation of load, catalyze private and non-federal public capital for technology and infrastructure, as well as advancing community benefits. So the kind of specific goals of topic area two or theme two are really to increase transmission and operational capacity, improve visibility to operators, enhance secure communication, interoperability, prevent faults that may lead to wildfire, as well as prioritize benefits to disadvantaged communities. So this particular piece of the GRIP program is anticipating awarding 25 to 40 awards, up to $50 million. And each one of them is a cost share of 50%. So the DOE would provide half the cost and PUD would provide the other half. So a little bit of details about what the SnowSmart project actually is. It's pretty much a three-part program. And first part is replacing our SCADA and ADMS. And if you love acronyms, here we go. Supervisory control and data acquisition, as well as advanced distribution management system. So these are software tools that are used by our operations staff to have visibility into the grid and control all of our field devices.
Yes, core.
Very core business, yep.
I had a question. Sorry, I didn't do it, ask it before, but on the previous slide. About improving the one of the features that is a goal, part of the goal, to improve the visibility of the electrical system to grid operators. Is that through software communications, basically?
Yeah, it is. And I'll touch on that in our next slide.
Okay. Oh,
all
good.
Over it.
Okay.
Good question. So we're going to do the SCADA ADMS software piece. And then the larger piece is bullet number two. We're going to deploy hundreds of communication-enabled grid devices. These are smart switches, grid closers, capacitor banks, and voltage regulators, all up across the distribution system in the northern and eastern portions of the county. And kind of a sub part of that infrastructure program is to replace expulsion fuses in the areas with our highest fire risk. So did that answer your question?
So does that also allow us to sort of maximize what our grid can provide us?
That is one of the big goals, is that if we provide these communications and new telemetry coming into our grid operations, they can make better decisions. We can reconfigure the grid optimally, easier. Right, that's part of one of the big goals.
Well, more efficient and saves money.
That is the hope. One of the applications that's going to come with this SCADA and ADMS upgrade is a tool to optimize our voltage across our system and expand on our existing conservation voltage reduction program. Great questions. I love them. Keep coming.
Well, I do have a question in my notes about what kinds of devices might these be, and you had a quick list of them, but I was kind of interested in that. Could you just repeat what kinds of devices?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I may not remember them, but I'd be interested.
Okay, yeah, we've got the biggest chunk of the devices we're going to install are smart switches and reclosers. So these are reclosers, the devices that when there is a fault, they'll trip and, you know, prevent an outage from the entire circuit. They'll, you know, keep it to a smaller portion. And then smart switches are really used for, you know, communicating back to the operations center, as well as allowing that remote control so that our operators can reconfigure the grid around outages. So it's kind of two parts around.
So this is focused on only a certain part of our service area, correct? And so therefore we already have that capability in some county.
Great question. So this is really kind of a piggyback project off of our Connect Up program.
Okay.
The communications network is being installed now, and we will have communications across the entire service territory. But as part of this program, we're targeting the north and east areas first, because those are the areas with the lowest reliability and the highest wildfire risk. And I'll have a beautiful graphic coming up in a little bit. All right, so some of the goals that we have with this program, and they're really kind of highlighted here, I've kind of already talked through them, is enhancing the resiliency and improving reliability through those smart switches and reclosers, mitigating some of our wildfire risks through remote programming of our protective devices, so that when we are in a high wildfire risk time, we can change our protection strategies to reduce the risk of starting wildfire, as well as replacing fuses, which when those operate, they basically expel molten metal towards the ground and could itself start a fire. So we're gonna replace those with non-expulsion fuses. Looking to improve grid efficiencies through improved voltage control. And really, this is all looking to benefit the entire county with improved efficiencies, as well as, you know, reduction in our wildfire. Keep on talking ahead of myself. So if you want some more acronyms, here we go. Some FLISR is our fault location, isolation, and restoration. And really what that application is coming from the software piece to identify where a fault is using all that telemetry coming in from the field and restore as quickly as we can, kind of changing our operation practices from, you know, sending someone out to drive, go identify, you know, to do manual operations, to do switching. All of that can be done in, you know, a couple minutes as opposed to up to an hour, depending on traffic, et cetera.
So this would seem to help us predict our customers when we might have restoration too.
I don't think it's great at predicting. It's more a reactive thing. Because
yeah, the information.
Yeah, yeah. The information's helpful because we can say, we'll speed it up because we can identify the fault is in between these two pieces, so we can get people there more quickly. But all the work for scoping out how much work is needed to be done to repair the damage, all that we still need our field personnel to have their eyes on and their expertise on.
We actually use those acronyms like, well, I'm heading out to take care of the FLISR.
Things like that.
You know, yes, we do. Because in the engineering world, we have so many acronyms, you know, we never
get to use them. You actually use
the engineer.
Blizzard, yeah.
People in the trucks.
Blizzard, yeah.
Well, I think they probably have their own lingo.
Yeah.
Probably not the appropriate.
Well, just, you know, just trying to imagine what it's like out there.
Yeah. Second piece, this is really the, again, a software tool that's coming with the SCADA AMS, and it's the voltage and VAR, volts, amps, reactive, optimization for demand voltage reduction. DVO, or DVR, depending on how much you're a fan of brevity. And this is really about that, optimizing our control of our voltage and expanding on our good conservation voltage reduction practices. And I think I've already touched on the wildfire and stream risk mitigation. So the end goal is all of these things we were planning on doing at Snowpud, but what this grant is really going to enable us is to really put our feet on the accelerator and speed up the implementation of these interrelated projects. Here's that promised graphic. So here we're seeing our service territory with each one of the red dots kind of highlighting a substation in our territory, with the size of the circle representing the relative reliability. So bigger circles, worse reliability, smaller circles, better reliability. And so from this graphic, you know, we're really what's driving our decision about where we're going to implement these programs. The shaded areas, green and blue, represent our disadvantaged communities in blue and our tribal lands in green. And so we're working to partner with the Tulalip Reservation, City of Marysville, these different communities to, you know, get their support and demonstrate the benefits to those areas as part of the grant process.
I do have a question, if I may.
Yes.
On the previous slide, you talked about the ability to reduce consumption for demand reduction during peak times. So there might be some customers in delicate situations, such as we're doing surgery at a hospital or something, and they should not have their energy reduced at a critical moment. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Have you thought about those kinds of things?
Absolutely.
They would probably, maybe they would be in a special category, or they would have backup generator. I don't know.
Yeah, I can address that. So what we're talking about with that demand voltage reduction is a reduction of a percentage point or two. So it'd really be imperceptible to the, you know, general populace, but certainly those places that have, you know, critical loads like hospitals and et cetera.
You wouldn't want the lights to dim at the wrong moment.
We can exclude those on a circuit by circuit or area by area basis from that program.
Mm-hmm.
But really the goal is 1 or 2% reduction in voltage, still well within our required limits of what the voltage is required to be maintained at. So yeah, instead of 120 volts, you might have 119 at outlet. Should be no perceptible difference.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then I believe that's my last slide. So if there's any more technical questions, fire away. Otherwise, Susie's going to come up here and talk about our community benefits.
So can you help us with volts, amps, reactive?
Yes. That's really the part of the electric waveform, you know, we've got a sinusoidal waveform, but it's really meant to establish, and this is junior level electrical engineering, but it's really meant to establish the magnetic fields within our equipment. And it's not actually used for power. It's the cousin of watts, but it doesn't actually provide any power, and it's just kind of transferred from place to place, causing losses and generally being a pain.
So it's only power factor?
Yeah, a closely related power factor that describes the relationship between watts and power.
And you may have mentioned this, but this also improves the quality of power for those that might be at the end of a long circuit, or where as it flows through whatever it's flowing through, by the time it gets to them, the quality may not be as good as it should be. So does this help that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And yes, part of the voltage and VAR optimization piece will be to provide communications to our voltage control devices, those regulators, so that we can monitor if they're operating properly and providing good end-of-line voltage to our customers that are end of line.
We're going to save money eventually.
Yeah. Okay, I'll pass it off to Susie.
All right. Good morning again. Susie Oversby, Senior Program Manager in Energy Services. First of all, I kind of think we need a mascot for Flizzer, and that would help us with the benefits plan. A requirement of our grant proposal is to develop what's called the community benefits plan. And that is going to represent about 20% of the total evaluation score. And DOE has asked that we address four objectives in this plan. The first being to support meaningful community and labor engagement. Secondly, invest in America's workforce. Thirdly, advance diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. And lastly, contribute to the president's goal that 40% of federal investments flow to disadvantaged communities. And this is referred to as the Justice 40 Initiative. And those disadvantaged communities are identified via a mapping tool that is provided by DOE. So I'm going to just back up for a moment to go back to this graphic. So as John has described, our work area where we're deploying all of the gadgets are in the northern and eastern parts of our service territory. And the work area includes the Tulalip Reservation and Marysville, which are considered Justice 40 or disadvantaged communities. The bulk of our kind of disadvantaged communities actually lie outside of the work area along the I-5 corridor in the southern part of our service territory. But a big part of this community benefits plan is demonstrating how those communities will benefit from this project in a significant way. So I will get to that.
Well, you know, while you're on this map, I may be incorrect, but it seems like out past Darrington, we actually provide power into Skagit County, in a little area. A little bit. So I was wondering if the Sauk tribe, which is very small, if they're in that area, if we provide them power.
Right. Yeah.
Because that would really click both of the boxes.
Yeah. Brendan and I have been actually kind of looking at that a little bit. So they are right on our border, mostly up in Skagit.
Okay.
It's interesting. Darrington is, according to this DOE tool, is considered partially disadvantaged.
Okay.
And I think because the Sauk has just a sliver of, it is in our territory. So
you're on it, that's what I want. Thank you.
It's a little gray, it's a little fuzzy, but we're certainly taking a look at that. I guess while we're on this slide, and just back to the point about directing benefits toward disadvantaged communities, that a big point we are trying to make is by mitigating wildfire risk in the eastern and northern parts of our service territory, we'll be mitigating the potential for wildfire smoke, which does so significantly impact all of us, but particularly those customers who don't have access to cooling, right? These happen during heat waves. And they have to make choices between opening their windows or keeping them shut. And that's so that's a big benefit that we're highlighting in the community benefits plan.
And that area did have wildfires last summer. Up in that Darrington area.
Right. Yeah, the Polk Creek fire started in King and spread to Snohomish. And so that's definitely a data point.
Yeah,
we're expanding it. So in line with those four objectives, You know, the foundation of this plan is really to leverage existing strategic partnerships that we have. We have many strategic partnerships with community-based agencies, such as Tulalip Tribes, Snohomish County Department of Emergency Management, Marysville Emergency Management, Puget Sound Clean Air Agency, and as the project develops, we'll be identifying additional relevant partnerships. With human resources, we are exploring apprenticeship and recruitment opportunities, particularly with underrepresented sectors, and have been in discussion with IBEW about some of those opportunities. It's great, you know, we have our diversity, equity, and inclusion initiative that's been underway for the last several years, so we're looking at ways to plug into that. And then lastly, as I mentioned on the previous slide, demonstrating how those project benefits are impactful to disadvantaged communities within the project area, within our service territory, and beyond. Smoke does not stop at the county line.
Darrington Strong is another organization. I don't know if you're
working
with them. They're trying to build the economy since that devastating accident, landslide and so forth. And they're working with forestry to design new ways of using, when they thin the forests, they're trying to find new ways to use the smaller dimension longer. Mm-hmm. So you might want to plug in with them.
Okay, thank you. I just
talked to Darrington Strong.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just realized this is a little bit small, but wanted to give a little overview of the application process. So I think John had mentioned back in December, there was a team that got together in very short order, put together a concept paper to submit to DOE. We received encouragement by Department of Energy to proceed with a full application, and they didn't have any demerits, whereas some of our peers did. We are in the kind of project build-out phase and grant application phase, but since about January, there's been extensive work across the district building out this concept into a full proposal. With cross-departmental support and with support from executive leadership team, this has included, you know, building out the work plan, budget development, external partnership, and labor engagement, and of course compliance review with legal, accounting, and human resources. And we're here today.
Could you identify for me community partnerships? Does that mean municipalities or?
Yeah, so we've had a pretty compressed time to pull this together. So we've been specifically talking with Snohomish County, City of Marysville. Actually, that happened just yesterday, and they're pulling together letters for us now.
Okay.
Tulalip's, there's a lot of activity going on with Tulalip's around resiliency and other efforts here. And so this feeds right into that. So we're working closely with them from that perspective. And I think, you know, as we move forward, we'll be engaging others as well.
Well, is it possible to get a copy of the concept, the original concept paper, not the technical proposal, just the concept paper? I think that would be interesting. I don't know if you would be interested in.
I'm not quite sure concept paper.
Well, it's mentioned, and that was what they submitted to the Department of Energy. And it must have been really, really good because they had no demerits. And they said, just go for it and give us the full application.
Yeah, that would be fine. And, you know, and we'll also have additional materials that are not, you know, the technical proposal, but that we can share as.
I'm not interested personally in the technical proposal,
sure.
But just the concept.
Sure, yeah.
We can, if that's confidential, okay.
Commissioner, can we just agree that that's a board decision?
I support that.
Sorry.
The concept paper.
Concept paper.
I'm indifferent, so it sounds like it's a go.
Okay. Yeah.
We're seeing the concept paper visually here, so.
I mean, it's already written on that SBU.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we can get that too.
Thank you.
And then lastly, we're pulling together the grant application, submitting that next Wednesday. That's a technical proposal of the community benefits plan. And I want to also mention that this is, as you can imagine, it's been an extensive collaborative effort. I want to mention Leslie Moss is a core member of our team and who's really helping make sure that all of our I's are dotted and our T's are crossed, with especially with the numerous attachments that we have to submit along with the meat of the proposal. I think that was our last slide. Any questions?
Thank you. More grants
to be here. So I'm really thrilled that we're going after this. This is great if it helps us build our system better sooner. And I thought of a mascot, a lizard. And then I think if you have those East Side Smarties to do a 30 second video, you could probably be a boss. Great presentation.
Thank you.
Yeah, while I've got a second, a couple of other quick shout outs. So Leslie was mentioned. We brought Leslie on, how long have you been here? A year and a half, maybe? Created a position to try to focus on grants.
Yeah.
One of the historical concerns with grants is that it's just, there's a tremendous administrative load. And so we're more apt to say yes if we've got the administrative bench strength to help. And so I'm very appreciative of Leslie. She happens to work in my division, so I can give her a shout out. She works in the finance division, so I can give her
a little biased.
But the other thing that I would transition into is Susie gently said that there was a timeline here and a lot of work. Let me just pile on that there's a tremendous amount of work that's been done really, really quickly to try to get this up and running. And so there's a lot of shout outs to a lot of folks, not just John and Susie here, but for a tremendous amount of work that's being done and done very fast. Kim's done a great job of helping to rally all of those folks. And the last thing I'll say is we need to make sure we give John a shout out for taking a college course in electricity and magnetism and boiling it down to three articulate sentences. So,
and we thank him for that.
Yeah. The last presentation of the day, Garrison, I think you're going
to... May I make a comment on grants?
Please.
It's a very unique system. Particularly at the federal level, I've experienced. And, you know, there's the technical data, but you gotta know how to present it and how to kind of get into their heads. I mean, it's not just a report or a request for something.
Yep.
It's very complex, and I appreciate you.
Yeah, and Susie made a comment there that, you know, we shouldn't go unnoticed. Didn't really get any criticisms or concerns or challenges back on the first submission, which is a good thing. It's kind of a noteworthy big thing there that it gives a good signal that we're on the right track, that they are on the right track. So that's a nice feather in our cap.
You gotta kind of click that aha with them.
Right.
What they're looking for.
Well, we've been very successful getting grants, and the grants we get are very large, so I'm thrilled that we have a new team member to help us, because I've done a grant. It's a lot of work. So.
Yeah, I didn't want to do it.
I wouldn't want to do it. So I very much appreciate that someone is doing it.
Well, I'm not capable of doing it.
And this is, perfect, because this is the direction we want to go anyway, and
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, exciting.
The last topic of the day is conversation on organized markets. Garrison, I think you're going to kick this off.
Thanks. Good afternoon, almost, Commission. This is Garrison Morris, Senior Manager of
Power Supply. It just feels like it.
It's sunny out there. We've got a
mountain time it is.
There we go. So I just want to be here briefly to tee up a presentation that's going to be delivered by Adam Cornelius, who's our markets expert. It's Snohomish PUD and a real asset to the company. And there's a couple things that I wanted to offer for context for what we're going to discuss today. The first one is that this is an update on markets, but this is not a deep dive 101 on markets. We do think that that would be of value for this commission, and we would like to offer kind of a Snohomish educational session on organized markets later this year. So I do want to share that we don't intend to go to all of the detailed places, but we do intend to work with the commission on that this year.
And I support that. And in fact, that's what I was thinking of. And I'm sure my fellow commissioners do as well.
Absolutely.
You may have noticed that all of us have been attending the PPC and PNUC meetings, and there's quite a bit of discussion there. And so bit by bit, we're going to understand it, I think.
Absolutely.
At least part.
Yeah, so we'd like to take, you know, all of those hors d'oeuvres from those places, put it into one meal, you know, that it is really Snohomish PUD centric.
Yeah.
So that's a future briefing. The other is, this is an action-oriented presentation with an ask that we're looking for the commission to consider. There is probably a wacky Spider-Man reference that I'll try to make here. Spider-Man said, with great power comes great responsibility. Commissioner Logan, you described the big organizational responsibilities that the PUD has. I would say that with great kind of community responsibilities comes great regional responsibilities. This request that we'll make is an opportunity for us to show leadership in the region and a critical market development pathway. And part of the presentation here is going to be demonstrating that value, what we might do, how we might get the most value for our customers. So wanted to put that plug up front that this is a place for us to potentially step up, and wanted to put that out there for the commission as you guys consider this. So
the regional leadership role.
Absolutely. So thank you so much. That's all the teeing up that I'm going to do, but we really look forward to your questions and the conversation.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Garrison, and good morning, commissioners. My name is Adam Cornelius. I'm a principal utility analyst in Power Supply. And so it's been about a year since we last talked to you about organized markets. A fair amount has happened in that time. And so, you know, we're not going to do a deep dive, as Garrison said, but we wanted to give a little bit of background, including a kind of quick review of how organized markets operate differently than the traditional bilateral market we have in the West. Give a brief update of how Bonneville and Snohomish's participation in the energy imbalance market is going, and kind of give an overview of the two day-ahead market proposals that are under discussion right now in the West. And you know, as Garrison mentioned, we also have a proposed action item. We are recommending that the board adopt a resolution for the PUD to participate in and fund phase one of the development of one of those two day-ahead market options, which is Southwest Power Pool's phase one Markets Plus proposal. We'll talk a little bit about why we think that's important, what we seek to accomplish, and how much we expect it will cost the district. And then we would plan to come back in 2 weeks for consideration of that resolution. And, you know, in the interest of time, I'll probably move quickly through the background slides, but please interrupt me, you know, with any questions. So, you know, the West is comprised of more than 30 balancing authority areas or BAAs. Everything from Bonneville Power Administration, which is RBA, some public power utilities, Seattle, Tacoma, are their own BA, vertically integrated utilities, such as, you know, think of Avista, Puget, generation only balancing authorities, and then there is the CAISO, which is an independent system operator down in California. And so, you know, aside from the CAISO, historically, you know, nearly all wholesale energy trading in the West has been bilateral transactions between buyers and sellers at a negotiated price. In order to deliver energy from the seller to the buyer, transmission schedules have to be procured across one or more transmission service providers. Transactions occur on a variety of time frames, long-term, monthly, day ahead, and real time, which is in hourly increments. The day ahead trading in particular typically occurs in either 16-hour or 8-hour blocks, peak or on peak. And that doesn't always match with our load shape and isn't always the most efficient way to buy or sell energy. So, organized energy markets work quite a bit differently than that traditional bilateral market environment. Instead of working directly with counterparties, all resources submit supply offers and load submit bids to a market operator. The market operator takes all that information, a ton of other inputs, and runs a large optimization model to determine the least cost set of resources to serve load across the footprint. Essentially, at a high level, they're finding that intersection of that supply and demand curve graph down at the bottom, and, you know, produce outputs such as resource schedules and prices. And next level, to add the next level of complexity, that solution must also be feasible and deliverable. So it has to respect operating characteristics of generators and transmission constraints. Transmission constraints mean that the cost to serve load might vary across the system. So if you have an area where there's a lot of low-cost generation, separate with limited transmission to a load pocket, you might anticipate that the price is going to be lower where there's all that generation than in the load area where there's a higher cost to serve that. So the market operator produces separate prices for each location on the system. These are called locational marginal prices, or LMPs. On the green box, we see that organized markets typically run this optimization software across two different time scales that work together. The day-ahead market sets up the operating day based on the best info at that time. And then the real-time or imbalance market adjusts for changes. That's not different really in at a high level from what we do today. We make those, you know, day ahead or pre-scheduled transactions to get a setup to the best of our ability, and then we're, you know, our power schedulers are always making adjustments in real time. The energy imbalance market that we're in today really is only that real-time market, and the proposals that we're starting to talk about now would include both working together.
So is the market operator then setting the price at many hundreds of points across the region?
Yeah, it's basically an output of the way they run their model, and it's essentially the cost to serve the next increment of load, next megawatt hour, megawatt of load in that specific location.
So the participants are obligated then to buy or sell at that calculated cost,
yep,
or price.
Correct. But the way, if you submit an offer to sell your energy, you're essentially guaranteed to get that price or higher. Or if you submit a bid for your load, you're guaranteed to get that price or lower by the way the optimization works.
Thank you.
So quickly, have a slide here on what we've seen through Bonneville and Snohomish's participation in the energy imbalance market to date. So Bonneville joined the EIM last May. You see the footprint there, covers quite a bit of the West. And overall, it's been a, it's pretty smooth transition operationally. The PUD side, I think the biggest impact were process changes from power scheduling to meet the different EIM timelines that exist. We had to make some relatively minor contract adjustments with some of our counterparties. Maybe the biggest difficulty has been Bonneville's has had some challenges processing the settlements. These are pretty complex. They get pretty complex settlement from CAISO that they then have to charges and credits that are 5-minute granularity that then they have to allocate out to all of their customers like us. So there was an initial delay of several months before they were able to produce their first monthly settlement statement and invoice. And they've been playing catch up ever since, and we're getting close to being on track.
So do you think, this would be an opinion, but do you think BPA is competent? Or I'm sure you're giving them a lot of help.
So I think Bonneville did a good job of getting their systems in place and preparing customers for what we would need to be doing operationally, which is probably more important in making sure everything is working, deliver power at the right time to the right place and have all those systems integrated with CAISO. It's understandable that settlements, which are after the fact, can be adjusted later, don't impact reliability directly, for example, would be later on their, a little lower on their priority list. Ideally, everything would have been ready to go on day one, but it's not the end of the world that we're getting these settlement statements.
But at least they're in.
What's that?
I mean, just the fact that they're in.
Getting in was a huge lift.
Yep.
It was not an easy.
No, it was a big lift. We and other customers, PPC, worked very closely with Bonneville to develop all the policies and all the way that the markets would operate and the way that they would kind of implement the EIM for their customers. And so, overall, they were a good partner in that. Perfect world, they would have had that first settlement statement ready to go on the right timeline. But if there's something that was going to slip, that was probably the right thing for it to be.
And I'm surprised to see that Bonneville is an importer. Is that just because solar is so inexpensive during the day that Bonneville holds the river back to sell power, their own power later in the day?
Yeah, so that's they're not an importer overall, right? So the EIM is a tiny fraction of the overall purchases and sales that any utility, including Bonneville, makes. And so it so happened that within the EIM, what we've seen is they've been a net importer. So they have the opportunity through that market to buy lower cost power at certain times, particularly in the middle of the day. We've seen there is kind of where that biggest net import shows up. And then they can use that water, hold that water back and use it for times that are most valuable to avoid higher cost purchases or make sales when it's more valuable, whether it's later in the day within the EIM or in other market opportunities.
So can Snohomish do that too?
So we are not currently a participating resource.
Right.
Our objective was to, we give a kind of initial look at it as Bonneville was ramping up. We wanted to focus on making sure we were kind of comfortable with getting ourselves ready to just participate or to be in the market as a non-participating resource. Slice product, which is where most of our flexibility come from, is an hourly product as it's designed today, and so doesn't have that sub-hourly granularity to provide those 5 and 15 minute dispatch changes that EIM specifically uses. We do get some of that benefit from Bonneville, both in general, all of their secondary sales that they make, we receive that benefit through offsets in our cost of our power products. We also work with Bonneville to set up a way where when they take a small portion of, they use a small portion of what would be our slice for their balancing reserves, that's part of what they bid into the market. And so when they are holding back that water, as they bought lower cost power through the market, we also get a share of that savings that we can then dispatch later. I think that's that share of energy savings that accrues directly to size products. We see that. We've thought about participating with Jackson or potential for some of our.
Just gonna ask.
Yep. It's something we're planning to take a look at over the course of this year once we have a lot more data on pricing and things like that to see if there's sort of some operational costs that come with and administrative costs that come with being a participating resource. So we need to kind of weigh those, and we want to make sure that we're able to meet all the licensing constraints that come with the Jackson project. There are times where it's very limited in its ability to ramp down. So we wouldn't want a situation where it was way up, take advantage of a market opportunity, and then we couldn't get back down and we were overusing our water.
Are you aware of whether BPA has any issues as a federal agency with the buying and selling of these products? I mean, it's already been vetted and approved and all of that.
Yeah, so
as a federal agency.
Yeah, so first, Bonneville buys and sells power all the time to, it's long power. So they always often have surplus power to sell. There's periods when they don't and are buying in the market. But yes, they have long history of being able to buy and sell bilaterally. They did, as part of their record of decision that the administrator issued prior to, as they made their final decision to join EIM, they did a very extensive review of their authority to join a market like this. So yes, I would say they're good to go, and they're legal, as well as all of our all their customers participate in that analysis.
Good.
Just at the bottom here, so I think I covered all this. We receive a share of the net benefits through the power products that we purchase. We get that energy savings to our slice product when they're buying in the market. And we have seen, partially offsetting this, but I think it's relatively small, our imbalance costs have gone up a little bit, but the benefits here to be easily outweighing those costs. Overall, seems like it's been working out well. Okay, so turning to kind of what's coming, are developments in day ahead markets. So there are two different day ahead markets that are currently under development. First is the extended day ahead market, or EDAM, which is CAISO is working on. So this would essentially be an extension of CAISO's existing day ahead market to any EIM entities that wanted to voluntarily join the EDAM. Second is Markets Plus, which is being put out by the Southwest Power Pool, or SPP. This would be a new standalone day ahead and real-time market offering. There's the potential that it could come with future integration with existing SPP markets that they operate, but that's more of a later step. And any participants would have to leave the EIM, so you couldn't be in both EIM and Markets Plus. EIM is on a little bit ahead in their design and process. I'd say maybe by a year and a half or so. They just last month had their detailed market design and governance approved by the CAISO board and EIM governing body. And they are intending to file their tariff language with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, in June. And then they're intending to go live late 2024 or early 2025. CivicCorps has already committed to joining the EDAM, and it wouldn't, you know, I would anticipate some other utilities making that commitment in the coming years. Markets Plus, we just last year they held a sort of informal stakeholder process, I would say, that resulted in a governance proposal and a pretty high level market design last November. And then they're kicking off what they're calling phase one of the development process in April next month. And that's going to go through an anticipated tariff filing with FERC, which was originally targeted for December of next year, 2024. And they're looking to, in response to some stakeholder feedback, on cutting that time down substantially. So that's still, that timeline is still in the works. And then they would go live in 2026 or 2027. Again, efforts are underway to try and move that timeline up. So, there are likely to be potential benefits of expanding these organized markets to the day-ahead market. I think we touched on this a little bit with the EIM, where there's opportunities for the PUD and Bonneville to market surplus power and purchase lower cost power when we need it. That hourly granularity that comes with the day-ahead market is more efficient than those block on and off peak purchases and sales that we would make in the bilateral world. There's some specific products that are under discussion that would provide specific compensation for flexibility, which hydro as a resource is really great at. There are, as well, there's just due to the kind of number of market participants and the sort of integration of the transmission system, potential market liquidity benefits and access to a wider footprint. Potential for improved reliability, greater coordination by market participants, as well as kind of that greater resource and load diversity across a wider footprint. So, if one area of the market footprint is, you know, experiencing tight conditions, it's more likely that could be benefited by surplus capacity elsewhere in the system. The market optimization, essentially their goal is to maximize the use of the transmission system. So we expect that is, be used more efficiently and with improved congestion management. Up to the last bullet where there's likely to be better integration of renewable energy, both through geographic diversity of, having wind or solar across a wider footprint, as well as that optimization model is really better able to manage variability and reduce curtailments. and so all those benefits sound great and are, have, there are likely a lot of potential benefits to the district, but the devil is really in the details. And these are some of the areas that we're focusing on to make sure that those benefits can actually accrue to achieve for the PUD and our customers. So Right. We're a slice customer. That slice provides most of our flexibility. We want to make sure that in these day ahead market constructs that do have that hourly granularity, not just slice, that slice, as well as any other BPA power product, can retain the value and share those benefits. Hydro, you know, has lots of flexibility benefits. We want to make sure those attributes, are valued. But, you know, as we talked about a little bit, it also, hydropower also comes with various constraints on the system, and we want to make sure that those can all be reflected in the market optimization, so they're not telling us to dispatch in a way that we can't match and meet our licensing requirements and things like that. Those constraints are always going to be foremost in our minds. Turn to the transmission side, we want to make sure that any transmission cost sharing that occurs is equitably allocated. And you know, we do have a substantial transmission portfolio, so to the extent the market is using that and using that transmission, we want to ensure that it's being properly valued and compensated. As a Washington utility, we're subject to CETA and the Climate Commitment Act, and so one thing that we're paying a lot of attention to is making sure that these markets can help facilitate the accurate accounting of environmental attributes. It's been a little bit of a challenge in California under their cap and trade program, getting that right. And so it's something we're paying a lot of attention to. And then finally, we value an unbiased governance structure that's ideally independent of any sector or. So over the last couple of years, we've put together an internal cross-functional team to engage in these processes, monitor developments, et cetera. It includes staff from power supply, power scheduling, regional transmission, and general counsel. We actively participated in stakeholder processes, comments, things like that. And Jofina was the stakeholder lead in the governance group, work group of that kind of initial phase of Markets Plus development. We work closely with our trade organizations. You mentioned you've been on Public Power Council meetings and hearing their engagement. So we work closely with them when they're putting out comments or things like that to coordinate. Specifically, Jason Zaskowski is on the Markets Development Committee at PPC. And then on the PGP side, I'm one of the staff leads of the Energy Policy Task Force that focuses on market developments. And a number of different sort of less formal forums between Bonneville and Public Power Utilities on market development that we engage in. Really quickly, we're engaged in these conversations because, first of all, we think they're, this market expansion is happening whether or not we're involved. And so we want to make sure that, we're able to provide input and help shape this market design for all the benefits and all those considerations I talked about a couple slides ago to, make sure that they'll work well for us and for our customers. Also, Bonneville has such an important role in the region. Everything they do is so critical to us. And so we've encouraged them to take on a leadership role in this area. And, if folks see their customers engaging and supporting as well, I think that kind of gives them a little bit greater weight. So we want to help support them. And then, of course, knowing what's coming just helps our ability to plan for the future.
Well, I would say for Snohomish, being at the table is so important, and we consistently seem to do very well in all areas. So again, I compliment that.
Yeah, I think that's something that we take pride in.
Yeah, if you're at the table, you can influence.
Yep, may not get everything you want, but at least you have an opportunity to raise your voice.
Yeah, I think it's all of the largest customer we are. Always be there. I know we are.
Yeah, that's part of our goal and why we're here today. Okay, so kind of turning to that specific decision that's before us now. So just a kind of overview, I've touched on this a little bit, but markets, FPP has sort of termed this upcoming period phase one. I would argue that there was maybe a phase zero that happened over last year to get to where we are. But phase one will kind of move from this high level proposal they have today to a tariff filing. The expected cost to SPP is just under $10 million. Dollars that they would allocate to any utilities that fund on a pro rata basis on their load or generation, if there's any kind of generational utilities that choose to fund. We've been having bi-weekly meetings with them, and we're kind of continuing to understand the scope of this. We'll understand who all comes on to participate, but we have a pretty good set of utilities that have signed on so far. And then phase two would be where they turn to, once they've gotten tariff approval from FERC, would be all the implementation efforts, software development, integration of systems, coordination with any utilities that are, would be starting from day one, all that effort to get to that go live startup time.
FERC is sort of a black box to me, but is FERC indifferent to whether there's one or two? Not more likely to deny the second application because ISO's got in there first?
I don't think that would be the basis of their decision making. Right? Their kind of criteria is this just and reasonable. And I think, if we look at the Eastern Interconnection, there are multiple organized markets across that footprint that, have challenges and seams issues and things like that, but they all do work together. And I don't think that would be I wouldn't expect that would be a reason that, FERC would deny a tariff. So, as kind of teased at the beginning, our recommendation is that the PUD should sign the Markets Plus Phase 1 funding agreement. We think that Markets Plus really represents a great opportunity for the PUD, our peers, to influence future Western market design and development, both by being able to shape a market more from the ground up, but also we think that development of Markets Plus will help help get a better EDAM as well through sort of competition. If ISO knows that EDAM is the only game in town, they're maybe a little less likely to listen to outside voices, and so we think that having the opportunity to eventually choose from more than one option is beneficial. We talked about generally why we might want to have a seat at the table, but specifically the PUD is kind of has a combination of characteristics that collectively aren't necessarily otherwise represented. So talk about we're a slice customer. Load serving entity within Bonneville Power Administration's VA. We're not VA like others. We have many LSEs use network transmission. We use point-to-point transmission. So there's just a little bit of kind of technical differences there that we want to make sure are well represented or well represented. And as a Washington utility, again, we're subject to CCA and CETA. So all of those, market design has impact on all those areas, as well as a number of general topics that any utility would care about. Funding specifically allows for us to vote on policies and tariff language when it comes out, and the ability to help influence the prioritization of different issues. We'd be able to participate in the meetings either way. They'll be open, but funding gives us that extra ability to influence the outcome. And we think the cost is relatively low compared to the potential impact. And specifically, it doesn't, funding this phase doesn't commit us to long-term costs or eventual participation in Markets Plus. Those will all come later. So a little bit more detail on how the phase one funding works. I mentioned the cost is just under 10 million allocated to utilities pro rata based on load. So the more utilities that sign up to fund, the lower everyone else's cost is. So we don't know yet exactly what our specific share of that will be. When we put these slides together at the time, the currently announced signatories were Bonneville and PowerX, but we're now up to 8, including Chelan, Puget, and then 4 utilities in the desert Southwest. So, and I think we're expecting more, but that's who they've publicly announced so far. So our expected cost is about 200,000 to, I would say, 260,000, down a bit from that level based on those additional funding parties. That's one obligation of funding. The second is, so phase one gets you through tariff filing, but what we don't know and what SPP doesn't know, what nobody knows, is how long it takes to get from tariff filing to FERC approval. It could be multiple rounds of back and forth. So the way that SPP has sort of managed that uncertainty is it said, okay, between filing at FERC and getting FERC approval, we'll just use a monthly run rate of $500,000, just fund that process. And so our share of that would be about $10,000 to $15,000. You have the option to opt out if that post-phase one period drags on. I wouldn't anticipate us doing so, but the optionality is there. It doesn't come with any obligation to fund phase two or implementation or to eventually join Markets Plus. We surely return to the board with those next steps if that was something we wanted to recommend.
So the costs are affected by how many participants there are.
Yep.
And when will we know how many there are?
So the deadline to sign is March 31st.
That's
so
for everybody?
That's for everybody. There might be a little bit of squishiness there where you might be able to get in early April, but I think by the end of this month, we would try to see everybody and we'd know in early April, we'd get a precise accounting of what our costs would be.
Is there any lobbying going on to get more people in?
I would say there are some behind the scenes conversations.
Some negotiations.
But every utility is going to make their own decision.
Right.
So along those lines, you said the city court is signing with E-band. PowerX is joining Markets Plus. Is it just every utility is based on transmission to location? One thing makes sense now. Can organizations switch in the future if we have two markets?
Absolutely. So first of all, until the market goes live, any commitment,
sure,
is what it is. And any commitments that are being made today are, including my Bonneville, are only for this phase one funding.
Yeah.
These efforts could fall apart. Who knows what the world will bring. Depending on what utilities go in what direction, different transmission, different, and the sort of nature of the transmission system could make different options make more or less sense. So that will be something that will be evolving as folks indicate. Many of those Markets Plus funders are currently EIM entities, actually have a toehold in the CAISO side, but maybe have an interest in seeing another option out there. But in the East, where there are multiple RTOs, you do see occasionally a utility switches from one RTO to the other if it makes sense for design reasons or their footprint or other reasons. So it's always possible to switch.
Do you think all of the differences among the states regarding clean energy or the different legislation is a complicating factor for a lot of these potential participants?
I would say that a big area of focus in both the EDM development and Markets Plus development is sort of accounting for all of that, all of those different state policies, and making sure, under CCA, for example, the Climate Commitment Act, it's a cap and invest program. There are imports into the state of Washington are subject to that.
Right.
In a bilateral market world where you're trading with directly with the counterparty, still challenging, but a little bit easier to like identify what's coming into the state. In an organized market, due to that optimization, if you didn't try and do something special, it's essentially trying to find all, dispatch all the whole set of resources to serve all the loads. And there isn't that kind of specific attribution from one resource to one load. It becomes more challenging to do that accounting. Mm-hmm. It's possible to do, to kind of make your best approximations. That's what ISO does for California's cap and trade program that's been in place for a long time. That's what we would expect either of these markets to do or to account for Washington CCA, but it's something that needs to be developed and is still under development.
So is our balancing authority? Are they calculating, are they figuring out all these nuances and differences that affect different states? Is that part of their job?
So Bonneville, under these proposals, both these proposals, Bonneville would remain our balancing authority, but that sort of balancing function would be sort of served by market dispatch. So Bonneville would still have that responsibility, mm-hmm. but the market would be the way in which it meets those balancing authority obligations. So yes, we would expect the market operator though to do that calculation and attribution of generation that's coming from outside of the state into the state.
So another question, how does it impact the EIM? Does Bonneville remain in the EIM and go with Markets Plus? Does that make
sense? So Bonneville will remain in the just joined in May, right?
Yeah.
Huge effort, big lift.
Sure.
And so they would, I would anticipate through all of this kind of development process, no matter what, they would remain in EIM. If they ultimately made a decision to switch over to Markets Plus, that would be an implementation lift to leave the EIM and join Markets Plus. I think that there's obviously going to be different software programs and systems to connect to. So there would be a little bit of a maybe a sunk cost in doing that, but I think a lot of the work that Bonneville did to get itself ready for EIM is applicable to any of these market opportunities. So, we're working on a plan for how we would participate in phase one. And be clear, we would participate in phase one, whether or not we choose to fund. We'll show up to these public meetings and we'll engage to the best we can. but as I said, funding gives us a little bit more weight. So on the left, we see the portion of the governance structure that will be stood up for phase one. That will kind of mirror what we see in once a market is underway. At the top there, we see the Markets Plus Participants Executive Committee. So that's made up of funding utilities as well as other stakeholders that have signed a participation agreement. We expect our trade groups, PGP and PPC, to both sign similar agreements and would be part of that executive committee as well. that body has the role of standing up all of the work groups and task forces that are below, as well as approving anything that comes up from those task force and work groups to go on to the sort of independent governance structure that's above it, that's set up by SPP, including the SPP board. And so, you know, there are a lot of work groups and task forces listed there. We don't have probably the capability or ability to be on all of them. We're starting to think about how we would prioritize and what we would seek to be get assigned to be voting members of these working groups and task forces if we were to fund, based on the areas where we think are, impact us the most and where we might have the greatest ability to influence the outcomes. We would continue to work with PGP, PBC, BPA, all of our, public power partners and peers that are, also planning to participate. And then, we would use our internal organized market team to staff these work groups and kind of talk through, develop our positions and approve them for, the MPEC representative to vote. So, your next steps, I think we intend to bring a resolution to the board at the next meeting on the 21st for us to sign the Montage Plus Phase 1 funding agreement. Mentioned that 31st is at the end of the month is a deadline to sign, and then in April we anticipate Phase 1. So, happy to take any more questions or comments, commissioners.
I have no more. I have a comment.
Sure.
Now, my comment is not meant to add it to this discussion this morning, because I'm so unsure of this. But I'm wondering when our workshop, that is planner education workshop, I might be interested in knowing what consideration, as these markets, organized markets expand, and there are a number of them, with regard to marginalizing or preventing market manipulation. And I don't want to go here today, and maybe it's not appropriate either for the workshop, but that's a high priority for me. So, workshop. Commissioners, would you be interested in that as a topic?
It's a good question. And then very important consideration. It probably should have been on the list of considerations.
Oh, no. I just want to hear it. Can I have that opportunity to?
Sorry.
Have that opportunity to learn some basics of. And I'm at either more sophisticated means you lower the probability, or it might mean that you increase it. Anyway.
Can I just confirm that you're requesting a workshop, an educational workshop on this?
No, there was a mention of an educational workshop.
So this
and is it possible to include something along those lines? And my fellow commissioners agree with me.
And I haven't heard that from staff, so maybe we meet today.
Let me back up. Garrison talked about that at the beginning of his presentation.
I wasn't in.
Yeah, and so the idea, because we talked a little bit about this just on our side, and the idea here was, you can get very, very deep into this topic. And so the idea today was these guys are going to try to keep it at a high level, but we do see a lot of value. I agree with Garrison. And when the timing is right, if you all have interest in doing a deeper dive into some of these things, because it's certainly good for you to be knowledgeable of this stuff. And so I appreciate Garrison bringing that up. It's something that we've talked internally a bit of.
Yeah.
Well, so TBD on the when and the timing and all of that.
Oh, absolutely. It's
certainly something
I just wanted to get it on the table in the back of my mind.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that the market manipulation stuff is front and center. It's top of mind.
Sure.
It's also very expensive.
I get that.
if you don't abide by those rules as well.
Well, when customers, sorry, when customers, constituents express their uneasiness about meeting our future demand, I'm telling them there's a lot going on right now that's going to help us meet demand. And then they want to know more. So that's why I'm very interested in, not that I need to explain all the nitty-gritty to them, but I want to have a good enough grasp of it that I can intelligently explain enough of this, because I truly do believe that we will find ways to meet our demand.
Great.
Yeah, but you have a hard time convincing many, a lot of people of that right now. So this is why I think it's really important that we do understand as much as we're capable of. And they say we only use about 10% of them winning, so.
You'll need at least 15 for it.
Yeah. And I just have one question. First of all, I'm thrilled to do the site. The governance structure of Markets Plus is be a lot more palatable. ISO option. So are we having this conversation really because Cal ISO heat up EDAM? If it wasn't for EDAM, would we even be talking about another option? I know the West has been historically a better market.
I think there's been interest for a while. There have been past efforts that haven't panned out. The EIM did work out.
Yeah.
I think prior to SPP sort of coming forth with Markets Plus, there was some conversation about whether folks outside of the CAISO could try and stand up an RTO or another type of option. And you know, as CAISO worked on that EDAM, that's been going on for 4 years or more, kind of. An initial phase, took a little bit of a pause, and then kicked back up last year. I think there's interest without it. Also, that kind of forced the issue, and you know, hard to say exactly what drove SPP to kind of come out with this. I know they're the operator for the Western Resource Adequacy Program, so they've had some other engagement in the West that maybe, you know, they saw a potential need for an alternate option.
Well, and I'm very supportive of a workshop for the reasons that both of you mentioned. You know, first of all, it would be the best for our customers' cost and, you know, adequacy of resources for our customers. So, thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Commissioner.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you. Good work.
I don't think we have anything else on our agenda for this morning.
No, we don't. So, well, commissioners, do you have anything more before we adjourn for lunch? You, sir? Okay. We are now adjourned at, 11:47, and we will resume our meeting at 1:30. Meeting is now adjourned for lunch.
Commissioner, can we just confirm that we're actually in recess, not adjourned?
Okay.
Thank you.
Little by little. Okay.
Yeah, it's just at the bottom of my page. Permit fee.
Okay. Let me say that. Okay, it is now 11:48, and the meeting is recessed. The regular meeting will reconvene here in the commission meeting room at 1:30 p.m. Thank you for the correction. Now adjourned. Recessed.
Adjourned.